That's running. This is running. Tuesday, Thursday.
Abigail? Okay, very good. Alfonso? Did it again. I'm sorry. Here, I'll just show you. It's just human nature. So, I look at the line real quick, and what if I see that? Forget that's your name. So, I'm going to remedy that situation.
Thank you.
Yep. All right, there we go. Sayesha? Hello. Marcos? Very good. Travis? He's not here. John? He's not here. Kyla? Hey. Hi. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very good. Aiden withdrew. Morgan? No. And Chris is here. All right. So I did upload the recording from last class. I did it yesterday. I apologize. I was going to do it after I was done with you guys. But after I was done with you guys, I had to go play lawyer. So, and then I just had a crazy busy weekend, but it's up there now. So, if you need to go back and refresh anything about in terms of the expectations and the syllabus, you can do that. This is the class. Is that the right one? Is there a new one? No, that is the right one. All right, so we didn't get too far. But this is, I think, pretty much where we left off. So, just an interesting update, because after all, this is political science class, so politics are always relevant. Based on the conversation that I had with the young man in the back, I don't know if you noticed, over the weekend, the administration filed suit against the city of Boston and the mayor for interfering in immigration law and ICE. Has moved into the city. They've moved into Boston. I heard they were operating in Milford. I think they went to Hudson. There was a couple other communities. So, unfortunately, whether we agree or we disagree, politically speaking, and again, don't forget, politics is just our opinions, but whether we agree or disagree politically, under federal law, it is the federal government's responsibility to enforce immigration laws, and fortunately for human beings, some people may get caught up in it, but it is just the system. It's not a perfect system, but it is the system because these laws have been on the books going back decades. And hopefully, no one does anything foolish and hopefully no one gets hurt. All right. So, we'd already talked about laws, I believe. Did we talk about laws, what laws were? I think we did. They just kind of give structure, kind of put up like guardrails. The way I describe it in my law class, you know, it's the government basically telling you thou shall or thou shall not. Obviously, if there's something that you shall not do, it's illegal. And if you engage in those behaviors, you will be subject to arrest and potential prosecution. Now, are laws perfect? No. Laws aren't perfect because they're made by human beings. And I hate to break it to you, no human being, with the exception of one or two that have ever lived, are perfect. We're all flawed. And so you have flawed people making decisions aimed at preventing harm in groups of flawed people. So obviously it's not perfect. But the good thing is our founding fathers were smart enough to put into our system what's known as due process. So if for some reason you do find yourself in a situation, rightfully or wrongfully, you do have the legal means to defend yourself. And potentially resulting in complete exoneration. So
As I said to you guys last time, if anything bad ever happens to you, just comply. Just go along with it, because if you resist, you'll lose.
All right.
This is also something you may have heard of a lot, that we are a nation of laws, not of men. One of the things that our founding fathers really, really were concerned about, because don't forget, what type of government were they rebelling against?
Monarchy.
A monarchy. What's a monarchy?
One person is in control of everything.
One person has complete control over everything. Granted, the kings of England were not as powerful as kings elsewhere, but most monarchies, the king is the lawmaker, the law enforcer, and the courts, the ultimate judge. Well, that's very subjective. Meaning, that person can basically decide what's legal and what's illegal, and it doesn't have to apply to everybody. It could be individual circumstances. Any of you ever read about, like, some of the history of some of the kings? Like, if you ever want to know a king that was just nasty, go read about Henry VIII. Not only did he kill a whole bunch of his wives, but he literally ordered the execution of thousands and thousands of his own people. Just because he didn't like them. And then he took their lands. Took their money. And no one could do anything about it. So when our system was made, the idea was, is let's have our rule making be done with these, or done through these laws, rather than people. Because what can you do with a law if the law is flawed?
Change it.
You can change the law. Again, the quote that I read from you to you guys last class from Washington. The whole idea is we have a system that can change, that is amendable. So if it's not working, we don't have to have a genocide, you know, or a civil war. We don't have to have blood flowing on the streets. We can simply just tell the people that are in elected office, hey, change things up.
Questions? All right, here's another thing.
If there's a law on the books, and we'll make something that's not offensive, we'll say the speed limit, and it's posted on 290, we'll say heading towards Marlboro, outside of the city, the speed limit 65 miles an hour. What will happen to you if you get pulled over exceeding that speed limit? Or I should say, what could happen to you? You'll get a penalty, right? You will, right? What happens if it's him? What happens if it's her? What happens if it's me? So it doesn't matter who we are individually. In theory, if the law is on the book, it should be applied equally. And by the way, ultimately, that's where the equality in our system comes from. People are supposed to be treated equally under the law, regardless of their circumstances, regardless how tall they are, how short they are, regardless how thin they are, how fat they are, how much hair they have or lack thereof, doesn't matter. Everyone should be treated the same.
What happens if someone's not treated the same?
What happens if someone is denied equal protection of the law? What can they do under our system?
I mean, they can maybe not sue the federal government, but take them to court.
You could sue the federal government. You could sue the state government. You could sue your town government.
Is suing only for like civil cases, or is it for like...
Well, if you're going to sue the government, yeah, it would be for money. Because you don't have the authority to put the government in jail.
Plus, there are protections for elected officials built in the law. But again, if found liable, they will have to pay. All right.
What about this institution right here? Does that institution have the ability to make laws? We know this institution can. What about this one? Or what about this one?
What are those?
You know what that is? That's the side of the administration building on Quincy.
Oh, okay.
What's that? That's a church. Can these two, could a college make laws? Could a church make laws?
Sorry, would their laws be like their code of conduct?
Absolutely. And who are they applicable to? Who are they applying to?
The people who attend.
Okay, so good. So if you are a student at Quinsigamond Community College and the administration put something in the student code of conduct, it applies to you, right? It applies to me. But does it apply to those people that are stuck in traffic down at the light over there? Why not? They're near campus.
They're not on it.
Okay, they're not on it.
Usually to be bound by rules of institution, you have to be a member of that institution or make agree to be held to those expectations. And people, even if they're near campus, haven't participated.
Well, hold on a second. You're mostly right. But what's up at the top part of campus? Way up on top of the hill. Have you ever gone up there? There's a big track. What happens if somebody that lives in one of the neighborhoods on the other side of the street up there comes onto school grounds and walks the track? Would they be held to certain aspects of the code of conduct? Why? They're not members of our community.
They're using the public space, though. By that, they're kind of signing on to the contract to abide by the rules of the space.
Okay, so the college has a right to post rules up there and say, if you're going to use our track, you have to do 1, 2, 3, right? And of course, if you violate those, there could be consequences. All right, what if you don't like the rules at Quinsigamond Community College? What can you do? You can complain about it. How much is complaining usually? Pretty much ages.
Not much.
Yeah, not much. What happens if you really, really don't like it? What do you have the right to do?
Not go to school there anymore.
Yeah, leave. No one's forcing you to be here. And by the way, if you leave, no one's going to come after you. You choose to be here, which means you choose to follow the code of conduct, and so long as you're here, that's the expectation. But if you don't like it, you have the freedom to leave. What about the church? Or any church? Do they implement a code of conduct?
Yep.
Who's the code of conduct for?
Followers.
Followers? What happens if you don't like those rules? What can you do? You can leave. Exactly. All right. So obviously we know this institution's rules only apply to members of the community. Church rules only apply to the people of the denomination. What if this building makes a rule? Who does it apply to?
Everyone in the country, I believe, and also to some extent anyone who travels out of the country that's an American citizen.
Everyone in the country. Everyone in the country. But what happens to U.S. law the moment you go into international waters and then land into the sovereign land of another country?
Oh, no, that's not.
Right, exactly. So you're mostly right. But, if there's a treaty in place.
Yeah, and like if you like commit crimes there, then the U.S. government can hold you accountable for them. If it's like,
you're right. If it's, again, if it's in the terms of the treaty.
if there's some type of extradition, mutual punishment clause in the treaty.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%.
But generally speaking, the rules apply to everybody who is in the borders of the United States or anywhere in the territories. Does it matter if you are a citizen or not? Not at all. Does it matter if you are looking to be a resident here or a tourist? Not at all. If you are in a country, the laws apply to you.
And if you don't like the laws of the United States, do you have an option?
One of us.
What is it?
Leave.
You can leave.
Well, to an extent, it's also like there's difficulties getting passports. It's expensive to leave depending on which state you're going to, and then you need to like get the legal processes to go to another country.
Oh, I understand that fully. It really does.
Yeah.
But if you really don't want to be here, there is a door, right, that you can choose to leave.
It's an expensive door, but yeah.
I'm not denying that. I'm not denying that whatsoever.
It's not. I could not imagine picking up everything I have and moving to another country.
But if you don't like it, you do have that means. Now, here's the irony. 90-something percent of countries on Earth, just because you want to go to them, are they going to let you in?
No.
Not at all.
Not at all. The vast majority of countries do not take in immigrants, legal or illegal. And in some, if you get caught, you get shot.
So don't try to illegally enter Mexico. Because the laws in Mexico allow the government to shoot you with no due process if the government deems you to be an illegal immigrant.
Now, do they? Rarely. But I know of cases that that's happened. All right.
Why can these... I should have asked before I clicked. I gave the answer. Why can these different types of institutions or Congress pass these types of rules or laws? Well, as our book tells us, it's because these institutions have authority over the geographic zone or area that they inhabit. So the college controls the campus. The moment you walk off of campus, the college has no control over. Church, same thing. Ultimately, the church controls everybody who goes in and out of the building. If you don't follow the rules, they're not going to let you in the building. United States government has authority over all U.S. territory. But don't forget, in our federalist system, there are subdivisions. So there are states. Commonwealth of Massachusetts has authority over the geography, the land of Massachusetts. Just like the city of Worcester has authority over the geographic boundaries of the city of Worcester.
So this means in any given moment, you are subject to, at a minimum, three sets of laws. The local, the state, and the federal. And if you go on college campus, suddenly you have the college rules. So you are never free from law. Which one is supreme?
Federal.
We have a top-down system. U.S. law is always supreme.
It literally says it in the Constitution. The Supremacy Clause, we'll talk about that. Any law of the federal government is the supreme law of the land. So this means a state cannot make something legal that the federal government wants to be illegal. The states must obey the federal government. Just like the towns must obey the states. And finally, the college must obey the city as well as the state.
as well as the United States government. So again, we have a hierarchy, top, down. Questions? All right. Now, ultimately, the reason why the federal government can tell Quinn Sig, for example, what to do is because in a hierarchy, the higher authority always supersedes the lower authority. So, for instance, Quinn Sig, the administration, may one day decide, you know something? I do not want to allow anyone to attend my college if you root for any non-Massachusetts sports team. If you root for the Yankees, you root for the Cowboys or the Eagles or the Titans, I don't know. You cannot come to Quinn Sig. Do they have a right to do so?
No, because if they take funding from the federal government, they have to adhere by the rules of the federal government.
It's as easy as that. The college does take federal money, thus the part of the quid pro quo is that if you take federal money, you must obey the rules of the federal government. And how would the federal government view discrimination based on choice of sports teams?
That would be covered under the Equality Act, right?
Yeah. Equal Protection Act. Yeah, 100%. So that would be a big no-no. All right. Great. We've already said kind of what can happen if you don't like it. Well, if you're a part of a social group, you can leave, and that's relatively easy. But the higher up you go, it becomes more complicated. So if you don't like the tax rate in your hometown, you have the ability to move to another town. Again, there's expense associated. If you don't like living in the bastion of communism, that is the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, commonly referred across the country as Taxachusetts, you do have the ability to leave. You can go to some place like New Hampshire that has no income taxes. You can go to Florida. I mean, you could leave. But again, there's an expense associated. But what about those people who choose to stay? Why is it that the majority of the people simply obey the rules rather than resist?
Law enforcement?
Yeah. What do you mean?
Like you get punished if you break the rules.
Let's say 40% of the population doesn't like what's going on. But they just kind of sit there and grin and bear it. They don't need law enforcement because they're technically not breaking any laws. They just don't like it. They simply put their head down and like, okay. Why do people do that? Oh, do you remember the COVIDs? Do you remember all the ridiculous rules that has now since been exposed that they made them all up? The masking, the 6-foot social distancing. They made it all up.
I thought that those were measures that were proven to have worked during the Spanish flu. Maybe those were similar.
Fauci admitted in Congress on testimony that there was no actual number. They just kind of randomly said, well, this is a good number.
When was that?
This was like 2 or 3 years ago.
I'm sure there's also empirical evidence that any amount of social distancing is more effective than no amount of social distancing, and that any measures are probably have at least a marginal effect than none.
I'm not saying they have an effect or not, but what I'm saying is those arbitrary rules. You had to be 6 feet. You had to walk one way up the aisles. It has all been exposed that they were just making it up as they were going along because there was not actual evidence on any studies that could prove or disprove determinatively.
When you've never been part of a national pandemic before, what empirical basis is there for that?
Well, that's exactly what I'm saying. They had no idea, so they were winging it.
Well, they did.
But here's the thing. There were ridiculous things, and I'll give you the perfect example. This was a law in Massachusetts. If you, during COVID, went into a restaurant,
You had to walk in with your mask on. And you had to keep your mask on until your bum hit the chair. The moment your bum hit the chair, you could take the mask off. Because you could only get the COVID when you were walking into a restaurant, but you could not get it when you were sitting at the table.
I think it was more about, like, it's very difficult to eat with a mask on.
It doesn't matter. If you're if it's a true chance of spreading this disease, they would not have allowed the restaurants to open, period. But what they determined was, is if you're there, the moment you sit down, you can take it off. But the moment you raise your bum off the chair to go to the men's room, the ladies' room, you had to put the mask on.
Well, they didn't really want to open the restaurants. They wanted to keep us on lockdown for a lot longer because it would have been safer, but there was a lot of pressure to open things back up. Technically, it's still not really, like, safe because there's evidence that suggests that COVID can have long-term impacts, such as, like, lung damage, possibly cancer, brain damage in some instances. I know some people have, like, lost their sense of smell and such, and, like, it is still a virus.
I'm not saying it, but what I'm saying is that rule was absolutely asinine. It made no logical sense.
Are you making the point that we follow laws and they're, like, socially constructed on, like, what we determine to be law-abiding just because of, like, their laws?
That everybody obeyed them because it came from the government.
Yeah.
The fact that it was absurd.
Well, I think whether it's absurd is subjective to interpretation, but I think I understand your point that laws are socially constructed on what we follow, yeah.
Our governor also mandated that you're not supposed to be in a car by yourself on the roads after 10 o'clock. Because somehow, if you were in a car on the road by yourself after 10 o'clock, you could get COVID. Prior to 10 o'clock in the evening, you were fine to drive.
So, can I just ask what I should be writing down in notes about, like, what we're supposed to be getting at?
Nothing. I'm just giving you hypothetical examples.
Oh, okay.
Because you've actually touched upon what the next click is.
The click is this. Even if it's absurd, the vast majority will obey because the people believe that the government's legitimate. They don't question authority. It could be, to your earlier point, that they're fear of punishment. Or it could be blind trust, blind faith.
To a large extent, I think a lot of people don't trust the government, and I think it's, like, gone down in the last, especially with social media, because, like, you have a lot of, like, false information, you have people that can share their
100%.
Opinions much. So, like, there are a lot of people who do not trust the government.
And one of the positive things about social media is they've exposed that the conduit that the government transmits information over the last 15, 20-odd years is essentially corrupt, you know, by proving the media bias, false news. If you would have been alive when I was your age, the vast majority of people trusted whatever was said in the New York Times or on NBC or CBS or ABC. We had limited media sources, and we were raised to believe that since, like, the time of Walter Cronkite, the media would never lie to us. And they worked completely with the government. And it wasn't a Democrat or Republican thing. It was bipartisan. Alignment?
What was the law that they repealed, I think in the 70s or 80s, about how in order to cover a story, you had to cover both sides, and then they repealed
it. Oh, no, it was later than that.
Probably.
The Fairness Doctrine.
Yes, and then that saw the rise of, like, news stations being purely for entertainment.
Yeah,
and, like,
yeah.
That, I know that had, like, a large impact on, like, how news got communicated to the public and, like, what biases were allowed. And now
we're more aware of it now.
Yes.
So the question is, and this is not a right thing, this is not a wrong thing, but what happens the next time some type of pandemic occurs? Do you think all of the people are going to blindly obey what the government says?
Well,
or do you think that there has been enough exposed that they were just making it all up to a large degree that you're going to have more and more people outright resist?
I mean, you did have a lot of people resist, and you did have a lot of people get COVID, and, like, there were, like, a lot of deaths, and that was a worldwide pandemic.
But were they deaths? Because this is something also they're investigating. Was it deaths from COVID, or was it deaths during COVID?
it's also could be correlated with COVID, because whenever you get COVID, your immune disease, your immune system is preoccupied with COVID. So just like an infection at that point could kill you, but it wouldn't have killed you if you didn't have COVID.
The vast majority of people who unfortunately died were people who had multiple health issues.
Yeah, so my mom,
you're right, it did weaken their immune system. But again, that's not to say that they still would not have died from something else.
So my mom was actually an ICU nurse during COVID, so she saw a lot of that. And so there were a lot of deaths that people had pre-existing conditions, and then they ultimately died while having COVID. And
it just kind of pushed the system off the edge.
Yeah, right. And COVID was marked as the cause of death. And I know that was a big issue during the pandemic. People were saying that hospitals were reporting deaths that were from COVID that weren't from COVID, and they were just doing it for extra money. It was actually just to show that these deaths would have been preventable had it not been for the extra pressure put on the healthcare system, had their immune systems not been under further pressure for COVID. So I know that was a big thing going on then too.
Exactly. But the problem is we don't know everything 100%. And I hope they continue to investigate. But again, bringing back to the point in the exposure and the hesitation to believe the government, growing more so, I think, in recent years than it would have been 10 or 20 or 30 years ago. Anything the government does is under scrutiny. And if it gets exposed that there could have been another path and that there were choices being made that benefited certain individuals, or there were individuals that overstepped their bounds, is the next time it comes around, are the people going to accept it? And again, I don't know. I'm just kind of putting this out there. Something to think about.
So is what you're saying is that like breach in like the social contract with the government causes people to trust the government less and therefore gives the government less authority in their laws?
Potentially.
Is that the...
And it could result in more resistance. Yeah. Or more people willing not... Think about how many more incidents of individual violence is being reported.
Yeah.
Why are people acting out in the ways that they probably would not have done in years past?
That's a great point that you make. I think especially now we can see that, especially when you see like so many aspects of the Constitution and the social contract being breached, like even like due process that we talk about is being like totally disregarded. So that makes an interesting point of like when the government has this authority, there's supposed to be this social contract of like, we'll keep up our end, we'll do due process and all these things, and you guys abide by our laws. When the government isn't holding up their side of the contract, it makes sense that people are going to hold less authority to those things
and then,
less trustful of the government.
Then what's going to happen to society as a whole? Yeah. So that's just something to think about. Something to think about. And could the trend suddenly reverse? Yeah, absolutely. Generally speaking, people's attitudes are like a pendulum. They ebb and flow, depending upon the circumstances of their lives. So you never know what's going to happen the next time around, and you never know the way the public's going to react. But I hope and pray we'll always be in a society where the vast majority of people, generally speaking, will follow those rules perceived to be in place for the benefit of the majority of the people. Good discussion. I like that. And by the way, that's what it's all about, my friends. Like I said on day one, you know, politics is just opinions. And everyone's opinion is wrong. All right. What happens if we get to the point when people refuse to obey and the government implements a police state? Would that be tolerated? I had a friend that was in Hong Kong during COVID. And he managed to collect his thoughts. He couldn't transmit them because China basically locked down all out of the region communication for about 2 years. And since he's been in the United States, we've had multiple conversations. During COVID, the government literally locked people in their houses. They were not allowed to leave. If they left their houses, they could potentially be shot. There was no food delivery. You had to eat what you had in your houses. The government would then randomly, maybe once a month, allow a small predetermined number of people to come out of their homes to collect new supplies. If you left, you had to have your cell phone with you. It had to be on at all times. Because in China, they track the location of every man, woman, and child in China through their phones.
They do that in the U.S. too.
Not to the same extent. They have the means to track. But they should not be, again, should not be accessing the data that is collected on the phones.
Oh, they do. That's like how...
Again, they should not. Do they? Oh, absolutely. The NSA has the authority to basically turn on any device. They can turn on your mics. They can turn on your cameras. They can ping you. They can read all your email. They have access to it all. And by the way, if you read the terms and conditions that are contained in every electronic device you have, you actually give the company the ability to give that access to the government. The only company that's resisted is Apple. If something happens to your iPhone, Apple generally will not comply with government requests to unlock your phone. All right, but anyways, getting back to Hong Kong, it was brutal. Brutal! But China did this in the name of their authority. They claimed they had the obligation to keep everyone safe. And if you did not like it, you suffer the consequences. This is when the pendulum goes so far that society potentially could get to a breaking point. Then what? What happens when a government rolls out the tanks on its own people?
Bad things generally.
Bad things generally. So, ideally, as Americans, we are obligated to hold our elected officials accountable, and if they engage in behaviors we don't like, we're supposed to remove them and put people in who are going to protect our rights to avoid instances like this. Now, interestingly enough, this is exactly why the Founding Fathers gave us the Second Amendment. And if you look at the constitutions of all of the original states, including the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, there are similar clauses to the Second Amendment contained therein. Because the Founding Fathers realized the natural tendency of government is to become a tyranny. So the only way to keep the government from becoming a tyranny is the people. Elected officials are cowards. Particularly the men and women in Congress. Because the men and women in Congress are not subject to term limits. The congressman from Worcester, Jim McGovern, has been our congressman since the 90s. He's been in this since 1996. And while a couple of people have ran against him, I don't think they got more than 10% of the vote. He is perceived to be unbeatable. He will be there until he dies. Mitch McConnell, Nancy Pelosi, Steny Hoyer, there's so many of them that have been in Congress forever. And they have the power of the incumbency. But you know what happens? If a crowd like that was to organize and show up in front of their house, they would change their tune. Because they know, ultimately, if the people rise up in our country and reject our elected officials, they are out of work. They actually have to go get real jobs. Here's another bizarre thing. You know, most of our elected officials have never worked an actual real job in their lives. Bernie Sanders. Everyone loves Bernie. Never worked a day in his life. He went right into politics out of college because his parents were rich. He never had to work.
Isn't it a good thing, though? Like, if you want people working in politics and making laws, you want them to have experience working with the laws.
But wouldn't you want to also have them working a real job so they can know what reality is?
Well, I feel like the life skills that you gain working somewhere like bagging groceries is similar to the life experience you would gain like working like at a university or like doing some of the same skills like.
Oh no! Completely different. Completely different.
I think it'd be better to have a mix of both.
Yeah, you gotta have some real, actual life experience.
Yeah, of course.
So, for instance, you need to, at some point in your life, you need to fail. You need to get fired from a job for not performing because you need to learn what's good work, what's bad. But if, like, the latest, what do they call it, Nepo baby, right?
Yeah.
That's the current buzzword.
Yeah.
The guy running for mayor in New York. His parents are loaded. He's never done anything. He's a failed rap artist. Uh-huh. No, Zendani or Mondani.
Mondani.
He's never worked ever, and he's on the verge of becoming the mayor of the most powerful mayor at the largest city in our country.
He has worked, and his parents aren't that rich.
One of them is a movie producer or a television producer.
We're independent.
They have a plantation in some country in Africa.
It's very common for like people in Africa to own land.
Yeah, Mamdani also comes from a family of like activists and people who have worked in the space.
Yeah, but he's never worked a job. He's never bagged groceries. He's never served his customer service. He's never shoveled shit. He's never been a blue-collar worker. If you get that experience, it gives you a perspective that you can relate to the people. Whereas if you're just theoretical, you've never done anything other than theory, you don't know what it takes to run a successful business. You don't know what it takes to hire and fire employees. You don't know what it takes to hold people accountable.
But would we want our government to be run like a business?
I would think there's a lot of people in our country that wish our government was run like a business.
Like an unregulated business?
Like a capitalist-based business?
A business, yes. A business that focuses on actual, provable margins of success.
How do you measure success?
On time, under budget.
Like, where do the people fit into this equation?
What do you mean?
Well, the people, the government has.
Because if you're running a budget, if you're running a company, you care most about like profit margins, right? And like making money.
Because you want to keep the lights on.
Yes, absolutely. But if you're running a country, yes, of course you want money to be able to run the country, but you also need the people in the country to be like doing well, and that doesn't always directly correlate with like money and profit and capital. That's kind of why capitalism,
Look at what we have on the alternative. We have government employees that have very few standards. They're usually in unions. There's no accountability. They're protected. They can basically spend other people's money to the nth degree.
But we want unions to protect our workers.
Pretty common in businesses, isn't it?
You cannot have a company that has a deficit.
Because
you will go bankrupt,
unions,
and your company eventually will go out of business.
Unions aren't great for profit, but they are good for like quality of life and workers' rights. So is that not equally important when running a country rather than a business?
Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is that if you have all these theoretical people, they don't know anything else.
Mm-hmm. Is that?
But if you have an employee, and I did mention.
Yes.
Hiring, firing, quality of employees, evaluation, all the rest. As far as the unions themselves go, unions, if you actually know about unions, the big, powerful unions,
what
they do is they protect all of their members, whether they're the hardworking or the not.
That's
flawed.
I also just, I don't know. I mean, I guess that's just ideological.
It depends on the union, because, like, I've had, like, instances with these, like, you know, you have to have, like, a substantial amount of proof to get into them, but that was, like, my mom's a teacher, so, like, teachers union, like, you have to have, like, a lot of evidence before you can actually do anything.
It takes a lot to get a bad teacher out, too. And let's be honest with you, if you have a bad teacher that can't educate, that is going to have an impact on all their students, and if it's, particularly if it's young age, that damage is irreparable. And if, to your point, you're right, because I used to work at a middle school. I was working on a team with a science teacher, and the woman was awful. All she did was play videos all the time for the kids. And most of the videos had nothing to do with science. which is not good. It took them 4 years to get rid of her. She was tenured. So, in the private sector, someone gets evaluated below standard, they're terminated. Does what happened to them matter? No, they weren't a good employee. Ultimately, good employees who show up and do their work to the fullest extent generally will always benefit in an environment where there is no universal protections. That's all. That's all I'm saying. But you're right. I won't go the other way either. I don't think you should have someone just from Wall Street. You know, someone who worked in, like, market capital. Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney. There's a counterexample to Bernie Sanders. His career, when he worked at Bain Capital, was buying companies, gutting all profit out of them, and shutting them down. So he had the opposite effect. He knew how to save the bottom line, but he had no interest in employees.
So when you say that it's important that we have people who are not working just theoretically, they have the experience to back it up, are you talking about people who have more white-collar experience and managerial experience, or people who have, like, blue-collar, physical
might be helpful
experience?
As well.
Okay, so a mix of both. Got
it. Yeah, exactly. But again, we are in the trend where, and again, it's a Democrat and a Republican problem. If you actually look at the vast majority of men and women who are elected to office, they have done nothing in terms of a 9-to-5.
That's because of lobbying. Like, if you have more money, the more money you have, the bigger an election campaign you can run, the more ads you can run, the more support you can have.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm not disagreeing with you. But what I'm saying is, it's my opinion that that's a flawed system. And let's also, no, actually it wasn't. The expectation when the system was set up was that somebody would volunteer, because originally elected officials did not get paid, they were not salaried, you would go in there, you would serve a term or two, and then you would go home and run your business. That was the expectation. But the problem is, and again, we'll talk about elections, we'll get to that, the power of incumbency, all the rest. The problem is that the system itself has become contaminated, based on voter apathy?
Yeah.
No, voter apathy. People continue to put these people back.
Because we are in a bad time because we have people who cheerlead teams. I only vote for Democrats because I'm a Democrat, my parents are Democrat, and I've always been a Democrat. Or vice versa.
There's some stuff to be said about, like, media bias. Like, I know Fox News was, like, super, like, oh, this is, like, they don't only hear one time the story. CNN only hears one time the story. So it's very difficult for people to see the flaws with the blank.
That's the flaw of the consumer. The consumer who actually believes that what's on, whatever the source is unbiased. But again, human nature, we like being in our own echo chambers. We like surrounding ourselves with people who think like us. That's problematic.
All right, anyways. Good discussion. Now, by the way, as far as guiding principles go, for the United States government, the way the government should be is the point you made earlier, the social contract. You can see the social contract for the United States government loosely based in Locke, I'm sorry, on Jefferson's plagiarism of John Locke's principles, found in the Declaration of Independence, in which it is stated, essentially, that we the people are given, endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and that government is instituted among men based on the consent of the governed to fulfill those rights. So ultimately, in theory, the government should only be doing that which is good for most of us. Can government do what's good for all of us?
You should try.
But can that ever be achieved?
I'd like to think it can.
Well, no, and that's why things can be amended, right? New laws can be created, because it's never going to be perfect, but we can fix things as we go, as we see the cracks in the holes.
So say we have a program that's suddenly only helping 10% of the people it's supposed to help. Do we keep that?
No.
No, we get rid of it, yeah. We try to improve it.
Or change it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly. So it's admirable to want to push for, but the reality is we're never going to get there. You ever hear of the word utopia? Do you know that's a Greek word? Any of you know what in Greek, utopia, how it's defined? I know how we define it in modern society, and that's not the actual original meaning of the word. The ancient Greeks used the word utopia whenever they referenced no place. Whereas today, we call that a perfect society. But the problem is going back to the ancient Greeks, philosophers throughout the ages realized perfection is unattainable. We will never be in a society where everything is perfect. Because at the end of the day, you have people within our society that don't want to adhere to or give in to the system. And will resist it.
But, to your point, doesn't mean we shouldn't be trying. All right. You also can see some guiding thoughts in our preamble. Because we in Massachusetts do have a constitution. And in the Constitution of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, in the preamble, it says the following. Whenever these objects are not obtained, that's securing the existence of the body politic, to protect it and to furnish the individuals who compose it with the power of enjoying in safety and tranquility their natural rights and the blessings of life, the people have a right to alter the government and to take measures necessary for their safety, prosperity, and happiness.
So out of the gates, the Founding Fathers realized they were doing their best to make the best system possible, but they acknowledged that there may be flaws.
And that allows for change. And ultimately,
it's how the government should get its legitimacy when it does actions based on the overall consent of the government.
But of course, let's be honest, overall means 50% plus one vote.
Because that's the truth. You win elections by getting 50% of the vote plus one.
Well, if there's multiple candidates, then you get a plurality.
So you get the most.
Yeah, no, you have to get a majority, 271.
Yeah, I'm saying you could get not 51% of popular vote and like still win.
There's no such thing as popular vote for presidential election.
I know it's based off of the election.
The electoral college, yeah.
I'm saying you still could win the popular vote, meaning you're not winning anything, but most of the country voted for you. But you still
right, because we vote on a state-by-state basis. Yeah, absolutely.
By the way, Bill Clinton. He won two terms as the president, and he never got a majority. He got a plurality of votes.
All right.
Here's a question.
At the national level, what type of government do we have?
Representative democracy.
Representative democracy. Democracy, democracy, democracy.
What does democracy mean? Actually mean?
I'm sure there's Greek or Latin. 100%.
I'm going to give it to you.
I'm sure you will. But just democracy, plain and simple, means that everyone has an equal vote. Like every person has an equal amount of say into what happens. Or that's at least the ideal form of it.
So by having a say, what does that imply?
That your vote, or however form you're letting your voice be heard, has as equal power as the person next to you or the person next to them.
And then collectively?
Yes.
And you're making decisions on the person and the person and the person and the person. Who's in charge?
The people.
There you go. Just because you said it. Demos is the Greek word for people. Kratos
is the Greek word for rule.
There was not a Greek empire. There were about 180, they were called polisias, polices in English, basically city-states. They were independent tiny little countries. And if you actually look, every single one had a slightly different variation, a different form of government. But at the core, even in Sparta, it was a rule based upon the will of the people. So the prototype, the archetype, if you will, is the Athenian democracy, in which all citizens would go to the ecclesia, which was the citizens' forum, and they would vote on every decision that impacted their city-state. But here's the irony. What percentage of the population was actually citizens?
A small percentage.
So right off the bat, you cut it in half. Sorry, ladies. You could never be a citizen in Athens. But even of the 50% of the population who are males, about 15 to 20% were Greeks from other city-states. So they weren't allowed. They could move to Athens, but they could never become citizens. Because the citizenship law in Athens said you had to prove that your father's father was born in Athens and was a citizen of Athens. And if you could not prove that, you could live there, but you could not participate in government. Plus, Athens had slaves. So add on maybe another 10, 15%. So scientists today believe, historians believe, generally speaking, on any given year, in terms of the overall population of Athens, only about 20% of the citizens. But they were all treated equally, and they all could participate, so long as they lived close enough to the city to actually get to the ecclesia to be able to vote. Which actually shrunk things down even more, because a huge chunk of the citizens actually lived in the countryside, 10, 15 miles away. It was very hard to be able to drop whatever they were doing and get to the city every time there was a vote. So on any given day, maybe there were about 5,000 people voting, but they were all equal, and everyone's vote was the same. And all decisions were done by casting stones. A blue dyed stone counted as yes, a red dyed stone counted as no. Every decision would be presented for the ecclesia. And every citizen present had the ability to go and drop their stones in the bucket. And whichever bucket had the most wins every decision. War, peace, taxes, all the big decisions.
But ultimately, it was the people who ruled. As opposed to monos archen, monarchy. Orkos, rule. Monos, one. Or an oligarchy, where some, a few, rule and had all the power. Well, the irony was, is some of the greatest Athenian minds, in particular Plato, despised the Greek, or rather the Athenian democratic system, because as Plato alluded to, in a democracy, even the stupid get to vote. And by the way, he had a right to claim that, because don't forget, it was the Athenians who democratically voted to call for the execution of Socrates. Because Socrates was convicted of corrupting the youth with ideas. Well, here's the funny thing. If you ever see the word democracy used by the founding fathers, to a man, they always associated democracy with undesirable things. Mobs, lack of standards, encouraging leaders to manipulate the masses by making them promises to elicit their votes. But of course, they're referring to a direct democracy. And the system that came closest was the Athenians. And in the end, the Athenians would be defeated by the Spartans. And they would be defeated. So the founding fathers were opposed to it. As Madison stated in Federalist Number 10, democracies, and I quote, have ever been found incompatible with the personal security of the rights of property, and have in general been as short in their lives as they have been violent in their deaths. Because the biggest thing that they discovered by looking at history is wherever democracies were tried, the majority always voted against the minority. And they always would take from the minority whatever they wanted. And eventually, they would eliminate the minority's ability to participate. For instance, in Athens, about 100 years into their democracy, they passed a law that had a practice known as ostracism. If you tried campaigning for an issue and lost and didn't let it lie, in other words, you wanted to bring it up again, the ecclesia could vote, and by a majority vote, you could get kicked out of Athens for a decade. So the founding fathers saw this, and they were terrified. Because let's be honest, the vast majority of people who vote know absolutely nothing about elections, or our government, or our constitution, or our system of government. But yet their votes are equal to ours. So the founders were opposed to it. Plus, truth be told, our country today is huge. 350 million people, give or take. Stretches across a continent. We could never have a system governed by an actual democracy. Because think of how much time it would take for us to get to wherever the center of government was for us to go and vote on laws. Plus, that would mean you'd have to drop whatever you were doing and show up to vote. So the founders had a different view. They looked to, already talked about Federalist Number 10. Never mind John Adams, we don't have time to it. Never mind the reality, we just did that. There we go. The founding fathers instead looked to the system espoused by none other than Plato. He advocated for a system known as the politeia. The politeia literally means the rights of citizens. Rights of citizens. Plato acknowledged that all citizens are entitled to certain rights. And those rights are determined by society. But what would stop me from conspiring against you by getting a majority of votes among the group to vote you out of all of your stuff? Because people, after all, are selfish. People are greedy. That's human nature. So, Plato was terrified. Again, the example that he always cited is what the democracy did to Socrates, just for trying to teach. So instead, what he advocated for was a system that would become known as res publica.
The public realm. The public realm.
Plato argued that society should be governed by people he called philosopher kings. People who were judged to be philosophers, intellectuals, who understand the way things work. Well, they should be given the power of kings and should have absolute control over the lives of every man, woman, and child. And these philosopher kings would impose equality upon the people. Now here's the irony. What Plato was talking about was the Spartan system of government. Have any of you ever studied like ancient Greek history? Know anything about the Spartans? What was life for the average Spartan? Brutal. They were basically treated as like drones, worker ants. They had the same absolute rights as everybody else, which meant you had the same size house, you ate literally the same food, you wore the exact same type of clothing, and if you did anything that was perceived to go against the group, you would be eliminated. But Plato said, in Sparta, they have equality. Every man is judged by their actions. Every woman as well. By the way, in terms of the ancient Greeks, the Spartans was the only city-state where women actually had some rights. One of the most important rights that Spartan women had was they actually chose their husbands. Not the other way around. If you were to compare in modern standards what Plato was talking about, it would be something akin to, kind of what the Nazis were envisioning. A lot of the Nazis' vision for the ideal state, was based on references to the ancient Spartans, because they were the perfection of humankind in Greek civilization. So needless to say, you would be treated the same as everybody else, which essentially means you actually have no individual rights. You would only have collective rights. Well, our founding fathers were pretty smart. They didn't like democracy, but of course they didn't like the extent of what Plato was talking about. So instead what they did is they narrowed it down on the Roman system. And they would create a government called, what we call today, a republic. In which it's comprised of different spheres of authority, each overlapping like a Venn diagram. We have the federal government, we have the state government, and of course we have the people. The design of our system is to be based on checks and balances, in which each counterbalance the others to maximize individual freedom. Freedom to succeed or freedom to fail. In the minds of the founding fathers, that was the ultimate freedom. You choose your own destiny. If you work hard and you succeed, you should be entitled to the fruits of your labor. Just as if you don't work hard, you should be entitled to that failure. But ultimately, it's up to you, not the government, to decide.
But unlike Plato, who said you should select the intellectuals and give them authority forever, no. Our founding fathers believed that our leaders get authority from consent of the people. So we pick who we think is best.
With the expectation is that they do for us what we can't do for ourselves. They ultimately believed that by having elections where we elect officials, as opposed to make decisions of state, that could check the ignorant and the uninformed in society. Have any of you ever read a statute? Like an actual law that's on the books? Is it easy to read? No, not at all. Do you think you could make a law? No, not at all. So then why are we going to have you vote on what a law is going to be?
Well, that's why we have elected representatives.
Exactly.
Who spend their lives studying law, which is why it's good that our congressmen study law.
But they should also have a job, too. Even if it's when they were young, selling ice cream at an ice cream stand.
All right. Federalist number 10, I'm going to skip that. Today's view, and this is where we'll leave it, I think, and then we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit about the Massachusetts system.
Obviously, times have changed from the Founding Fathers. When the Founding Fathers made our system, they didn't envision political parties. They, if you read the Founding documents, believed that the people would be naturally inclined to elect the best man or woman based on their qualifications. The problem that we have is if they were to come back today, they would criticize us for partisanship. Because there are too many people that vote the party that don't look at the person. So I'll give you one truism example and then we'll call it a class. I have been a registered Republican my whole life. My mother was a hippie. When I told her I registered as a Republican, my first voting opportunity, she almost threw me out of the house, but I did not care. The reason why I registered as a Republican, because my favorite president at the time was the president of the United States, Ronald Reagan. But I also was an admirer of Theodore Roosevelt and Abraham Lincoln and Calvin Coolidge. I did not like any of the Democrat presidents. So why would I register as a Democrat? That was my mindset as an 18-year-old. As I've matured and I've observed politics, my personal opinion is that, in general, the Republicans have a tendency to do more for most people. They're not perfect, though. As opposed to the Democrats, who tend to be self-serving. So I have never voted for a Democrat in this state, because I do not believe in the visions and views of the Democrat Party of Massachusetts. But if I was to live in another part of the country, I probably would be a Democrat, because at the end of the day, my positions are mostly similar to, as it turns out, JFK, John Fitzgerald Kennedy. But that's not the times we live. But just because I'm a Republican, you know how many times I've actually voted for Republicans? Very few. I stay a member of a party because you have to have a counter to the majority party that we have in our state. But I didn't vote for Charlie Baker. I haven't voted for any of the left, or Jeff Deal, or John, whatever Deal's name was. I haven't voted for any of those guys because I don't believe they're looking out for the majority of people as well. So when I go into the voting booth, I always vote for the man or woman who I think will do the best. Even if it means I gotta write in Donald Duck, which is a choice too. All right, I kept you a minute late, I apologize. Go into Blackboard, skim through chapter one, read it all the way through. I'm gonna try to finish chapter one, because we're gonna get bogged down on the federalism stuff, which is in chapter two, because it's complicated. And by the way, thank you.
Thank you.
At least to the two of us. And I know there was some contributions in the back, but we want to bring you in next class. I always love having conversations. We'll see y'all later.